is the beginning of Channel 2 Right, and a continuation of the visit with Tuck and Mac, the first time in the big kitchen, April Fool's Day, Wednesday night, the 1st of April, 1970. This beginning of Channel 2 Right, and a continuation of that visit, with Tuck Mac and Ms. Mac in the big kitchen on Wednesday night, the 1st of April, 1970. This is the beginning of Channel 2 Right, and a continuation of the visit with Tuck Mac and Ms. Mac in the big kitchen, the first time in the big kitchen, April Fool's Day, 1st of April, 1970, the continuation of the visit with Tuck Mac and Ms. Mac in the big kitchen on Wednesday night, the 1st of April, 1970.
You mean they're hard to start?
It seems like there's always something wrong with them.
Well, I don't have much trouble with ours. I've got one out there that's got an strong start on it.
I haven't seen one of them in a long time.
I know. But, you know, way back, most all of them, didn't any of them have a self-start on it?
Yeah. Now, they had self-starts, but we didn't buy them.
Well, first track that I had in dealing with was an old farm mall.
Yeah.
Had old iron wheels and flanges on it. And it didn't have no place for a start off. You run it started on gasoline and switches over to gas when it got hot.
Yeah.
I mean, switched to kerosene. Lord, that thing would kick you. One morning when it's cold, that oil gets stiff down in that base. And you can't hardly turn it over. There's only one or two wires on it that's insulated. I took them loose, and I built with lighting up fire on it. His boss come out there, he said, "You gonna burn up a track?" I said, "I'm gonna try to get it where I can start to go to work, because I can't turn that thing." No, those old things would rip. If you got your plow and the thing hooked to where it couldn't pull it, the plane would come right straight on the I was always particular. I didn't want to come back over on me.
Yes, it was. A lot of ways of breaking your neck out there.
Yeah.
You know, that, I played the tape, that's remarkable, all that, what you said about Henry Brown. That's nice. I never thought I'd know that much about him.
Yeah.
And like I told you, I never knew that he was such a worker.
Oh, Lord.
I just figured he'd always stall, you see, and stood aside and let somebody else do the work.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these fellas you work with from town, I was thinking about them. Now, Mr. Barr, now, you worked with somebody out of Ocala.
Oh. At first is, what was old man Rainey's initial? Lamar Rainey.
Rainey.
Mm-hmm.
Rainey.
He's got a truck stop going in the old road just before you get to 301, I guess.
Yeah.
And you didn't work with them until about...
No, that was later years.
1940s is you started working for them.
Oh, that was later?
Mm-hmm.
I was up there with my little, you call it one horse farm. And he had a fella up there with a pretty good fella. He's a good neighbor. Clarence Rowell. And they didn't get along. And then he asked me if I'd take it. And I told him I couldn't, that I had more than I could tend to at home. He said, well, he was going to get rid of Rowell. And Clarence was sharecropped. No, what? He was farming and cutting his land, anyhow. And Rainey says, he got to go. I said, well, I can't help him. I'd quit and go up there and help him drive and gather cattle or something, you know, once or twice a year. He said, well, I'm going to get rid of him. I said, well, you can't. Not until after Christmas, anyhow. crappies as well. Of course, he's got his crappie and you can't make it move to the other end. He says, we'll buy his crop. I said, well, there's something else you hadn't thought about. I said, his wife's pregnant and you sure can't make it move till the child's born. The last time I was working and he come by and he says, I want you to help me draw a cow tomorrow. I said, no, I can't. He said, what about next day? I said, yeah, I'll help you next day. So he hit, wrote Clarence Rowell a letter, that was the man's name out there on the place, and told him to, got a big field, a hold up field over there. And he told him to go around and see if the fence was all right. And he got to thinking about it, and he sent his son up there to be sure to get Clarence's word to go around it. Well, the second day I went with him, and we got a herd of cattle and coming back in and got within about a half a mile of the pen, and I was up front, and I saw some cattle coming out, going back the other way. I got around them and got them in a herd, and I told Rain, now, them cattle coming from somewhere, they're not supposed to use down on this end. Is them the damn cattle we drove yesterday? Well, I don't know nothing about that. I wasn't here. So we got to the back gate. He and I went this way, and two or three went this way. And we went down there about 1/8 of a mile, and there was a tree across the fence. We'd been there so long till the cattle had a trail upside. Clarence hadn't attempted to fix it.
Yeah.
Man, he's going now.
Who was Raul?
He was,
He worked out there?
He farmed out there. That was after my brother and Joe Smith was the last foreman out there.
Mm-hmm.
And Clarence's dad-in-law.
Clarence Rowell?
Yeah. His name was Saul Morgan.
Yeah, and they used to haul a lot of stuff.
And Saul went out there and all the old fences were down, a half down, and he fenced the thing up. And got in good shape, and he had a big bunch of goats and some hogs and a few cattle. And the year he got it to where he could go ahead, he planted a bean crop out there and got out there and got too smart and got hot or something and had a stroke and died. Well, Clarence was a son-in-law, and he just saw all had three or four boys. And Clarence just fell into it.
Yeah.
And Saul had made that business deal with the company.
Uh-huh.
So Clarence, he just stepped in and he was doing good out there. He got some hogs. And Mr. Christian down here at McIntosh furnished him, and he raised truck crop beans and cabbage. And one year, him and a fella by the name of Rex Waldron had 20 acres of eggplants over there. And I never saw as many eggplants in my life. And they made a little money. But Clarence, as you say, he was a planter, but he wasn't a worker.
Yeah.
He had to get niggers and let them do the work, and he'd sit around at the end and watch.
Yeah.
So he finally got he got lost out.
Now, what was the company?
Ocala Manufacturing Company.
Ocala Manufacturing Company. Was that one of the banks down there?
No. I don't know whether old man Jim Taylor or Eddie Collins was, wasn't they interested in some bank? I don't know.
Oh, I know, it just went by the Ocala.
Ocala Manufacturing Company.
I knew old man
now
Jim.
Now, they bought the hammer from the Bar Airs.
Yeah.
Oh.
And that's the way they got it.
Oh, I see.
After Uncle John died and, Dr. Watkins died, and the grandson went out to California, I believe, on the tow, and died out there, and it just seemed like they lost everything they had. So they sold the hammer to Mr. Jim Taylor. He bought it. I'm sure he bought it for $12,000.
All that hammer.
Dr. Watkins was a planner. He planned his son's wedding to his first cousin. She had a lot of problems up in either South or North Carolina.
Yeah.
I think they got that. she wound up teaching school.
Yeah.
She's a very nice lady, though. I like Miss Carrie.
Well, let me see. Now, who is Rainey? He worked out there.
Yeah, he was a cattleman.
He's a cattleman.
Yeah.
Now, he worked out there for Jim Taylor?
For the Oak, yeah. For Ellie Collins. Yes, Ellie Collins.
Yeah.
Yeah, the first cousin of Leroy Collins, which was our governor.
Yeah.
And Leroy Collins and Rainey was big friends. And so Leroy worked him in down here with Ellie and got him this job. And they own quite a bit of property between Silver Spring and Fort McCoy.
Yeah.
And old man, and they had a cattle ranch out there.
How far back does that go? Not far.
Yeah, 20. How long have I had the hammer? 20.
You mean long Mr. Rainey?
Yeah.
In charge of the hammer? No, he
was
in charge of it before you.
Yeah, before I went over there. About 25 years.
25 years, I imagine.
Yeah.
I could tell you exactly
Old man Taylor had 35,000 acres of land out that pasture. And timbered, and he deeded to the state.
But that's all somewhere else, not out in Hamlet.
No.
You still talk about
that. Oh, he did deed some of it to the state?
All of it. And but he reserved the timber and grazing rights. That's all it was good for.
Yeah.
And
sometimes it's really.
So then there's an old doctor, Dr. Heather. He made a pile of money and didn't know how to spend it to my way of thinking. He went back there and he bought a great, I don't know how many acres of land. Called it Heath Island. It's east of Silver Spring. And old man Jim Taylor bought that for a song. And that old man had built a mansion out there. The house must have been close to 150 feet long. And all in the downstairs was dining and dance floors and gambling and everything you could think of. And upstairs was a sleeping quarters. He even had an electric light plant out there.
Oh.
You have to
go
to
somebody
and pay him to go in. Jim Taylor. So he was the operator, you might say.
Yeah, he was. He started off.
That's right.
And they had a little ice plant. Then they put in a crate manufacturing place. They made every kind of crate and box and cup you could imagine. And he owned lots of property around there, plus orange groves and cattle and everything.
Mm-hmm.
This Ellie Collins, he married old man Jim's daughter. He had a son, and the son went all through, I don't remember which war now. Never got a scratch on him, come back to Ocala and got an automobile wreck and got killed.
Yeah.
No man, Christian's son here at McIntosh did practically the same thing.
Oh.
And old man Jim Taylor's youngest sister, Miss Margaret Taylor, was my second grade school teacher.
Well, that threw you in the Ocala district when you was working for Jim Taylor.
No. He lived in Ocala, but he bought this place up here.
Yeah.
And they bought 1,700 acres of land over that out from Williston around Johnson Lake. And Rainey tried to get me to take that over and look at it. I told him I couldn't. I had too much.
Well, you had a whole lot on you then. I thought you fished every now and then. Hunted.
You did.
I did, but I worked too. Yeah, and then you were asking about Bailey. See, Bailey was Ellie Collins' son-in-law. In other words, he is old man Jim Taylor's grandson by marriage.
Yeah.
That's where he come in.
Yeah.
And he got in there and was going to, Mr. Rainey was a good fellow, but he wasn't a cowman. He didn't know cattle. Rainey was going to show what he could do out there.
Yeah.
He got along good, and he went forward. He decided to buy some mixed cattle, and well, it was mostly Bramwells, and he sent me 150 head of bred cattle to help us up there.
Oh, that was Mr. Rainey?
No, this was Mr.
Bailey?
Bailey.
Yeah.
And they got along just fine, and till it started calving, then the cows and calves started dying. It was winter like this winter when it was so wet.
Yeah.
And they just went all to pieces. And he decided, he sent 600 sacks of feed up there. And of course, I was getting benefit by that because my cows were getting some feed too. And he decided he was going to move them out. And so wet you couldn't get a truck past my place there.
Yeah.
So we drove those cows out and drove them out in Marion County over to Elbert Zetrow's pen. It was pretty high and dry. He got his cows out, so that left me with the whole thing there.
Who was this? Now that was Bailey.
Yeah.
Clyde Bailey?
Man Bailey.
Man Bailey.
Mm.
Man Bailey.
That's the only name I know of. He had a right up in what, aggressive farmer?
He
was one of the outstanding cowmen.
Well, Ocala's a cattle headquarters.
And horses,
you know.
And
well, his father's a big cattleman, too.
Yeah.
Really?
I think Clyde Bailey's one of the best cattlemen in the state. Not the largest, but the best, you know.
Now, let me see. Clyde Bailey?
Yeah.
Who is this man who?
Man Bailey.
Man was Clyde Bailey's son.
Yeah.
I see. A lot of people he knew back there. Well, now, let me see. After him, they got, you said the other day, Man Bailey. He and his daddy was the best cattleman.
Two of the best cattlemen in the state. They weren't the largest operators, but they got lots of cattle.
Well, now, Rainey is the one who sent you the 180 bred heifers.
No, Bailey.
Bailey.
Man Bailey.
But they were still good cattlemen.
Yeah. But he moved them. I never will understand that. And old man Rainey would take
it. Well, don't you think it was because he took over the hammer when Mr. Rainey, they let Mr. Rainey go, and then man Bailey was supposed to take over everything, and I think that he didn't know the hammer. And you know the
that's probably that, but Rainey was then mean and yearlings up there. Mean and yearlings would take suckling calves off a cow and send them up there. If it'd been me, every one of them would have died, but he never lost a very few.
I just don't think that the Baileys were used to
well, the weather conditions had a lot to do with it, too. When it gets wet up there, I've seen a sweat old cow have to hunt good to find a dry place to lay down.
Yeah.
And naturally, when they do that, well, there's not very much grass or anything else for them to eat.
Well, now, what did you learn then from the Baileys?
I learned how to drive cows.
Oh.
I learned more, but from the time he was up there, I honestly believe I learned more than I did in the 10 years previous to it.
But you didn't learn it from them.
He knew how, and I watched him.
He knew how to handle them.
He knew how to handle them, yes, sorry. And Clyde Bailey bought, I don't know how many, I'll say 20 old grown big steers, and bought them for the company, and we put them up there, and Rain and them, me maybe included, went out there, and we let them get away 3 or 4 times. And that hammock is, it isn't like riding out here on a highway or on a prairie, it's thick. When they got away 3 or 4 times, then you couldn't pin them. So when Bailey took over, he got some of the pair of boys and a little Cuban. And he went out there and they roped those steers in that hammock and on the prairie well they could catch them.
And horses.
Mm-hmm.
The riding horses.
And riding horses and had dogs. And Those steers, the smallest one of them will be over 1,500 pounds. And in the bunch, they got an old rig. And I told Mr. Rennie he's fighting. We had a bunch of young bulls up there. I say, we got, had two and they had five or six. And I said, let's get rid of them. He said, well, we'll try to pin him. We tried. He'd run over you. He wouldn't drive. So he told me to kill him. And I took my son up there and he got a shot at him. And Ernest Denton. And finally, I got my brother in law. He's supposed to be a sure enough good shot. And went up there that morning and found him. And I'd killed two horses. And this Ernest Denton had a Jeep, and I had an old Studebaker truck. Well, Reuben hit the steer in the side of his head. It addled him, and I had a barred 22 high powered rifle. I put the dogs on and run around and beat him up. And I jumped down, killed him, and got an aim on him, and a darn rifle says click. I'm so mad I started wrapping around the tree. And I had Ernest Denton had a 30-30, a 306. And I hollered to him to bring it to me. Well, that time the old steer moved on off. I got the dogs out and then stopped him again. That time I shot him down. And I run up there and Ernest is begging me to come back. I said, he's kidding. He get up and kill me. I said, he can't kill me, he's dead. And anyhow, when I went up there, he blinked his eye. And I wasn't for sure he was dead and I shot him again. But I didn't have to because he was dying. And so the helmet was kind of damp and you know, an old truck won't pull much when it's damp. I had to pull him 150 yards to a tree. We would put the blocking tackle up and pull him up to skin him. And I said, Ernest, I don't believe that truck will pull him. He said, that Jeep will pull him, a little old Jeep just like mine out there. And I laughed in his face. And that thing, the cow as big as a Jeep. And he said, let's try it. I said, all right, back up here. I got a chain. I wouldn't trust no rope. I put a chain around his head and tied him up pretty good. He put that thing in, low four-wheel drive, and it just walked right on across the country. And we got him up there, and I knew how large he was. And I put my rope up high enough to where I could pull him up a little bit and skin down and pull him up. And when we got him skinned and gutted, sawed down, and just pulled him on up and cut him loose and let him fall down in the truck. When we got to Ocala and weighed him, he like 2 pounds, weighing 200 to the quarter. You can imagine what size he was. And that's the largest cow ever. But, and the fat was that thick between that cow's hide and his meat. And I told the man down there, old man Newman, I knew someone. Wasn't it? I told him to grind every bit of it but the bones up in Hamburg because I figured that was the only way he could eat it. But you know, it was pretty fair meat. He was fat and good.
Fish,
yeah.
Going
a lot of hamburger. Sure was. Well, I just got a half of it, but I had plenty of it.
Well, now, I just taught you. Henry Brown's more interesting than anybody else you've mentioned.
Yeah. Well, I imagine he's done it about as much or more than anybody right around. Did I tell you about the boy who came out from the west?
No.
He came in with Mabel Max, out west, sure. You know, we used to have
him
fast.
Yes. And now, who is that?
Bill Wheeler.
Who?
That's all I ever know. Bill Wheeler.
Bill Wheeler. That was from the Mabel Max show?
Yeah, Mabel Max, Wild West show.
Yeah.
He was a bucking horse rider.
Yeah.
And we finally got him out there and we broke wild horses together.
Yeah. Tell me about it.
Well, you know, I don't know much to tell you. He was a good man, but he drank, and when he drank, why, he wasn't so good. He and I broke horses together, drove cows together, caught hogs together. And one day we had a little trouble and had a fight. And he come on over to the house and he was pretty full and I told him to stop. We was going wild hog hunting and I carried my pistol that morning. Got over there and we all had our pistol. And they put on, he was batching and we put on something to cook. The fella come on us to go hog hunting and we went on a hog hunting. I shot him and broke his leg and carried him to the hospital. And he got well and we're just as good a friend as ever. Finally got to be a marshal of Micanopy.
Are you a roughneck?
No. I was trying to protect myself. And old Dr. Roseborough had a little nurse down there. And Bill, when Bill was marshal there, he went down and insulted this little girl. And she went and told Bill about it. And he went right straight on to Doc and told him. He says, if I were here, you insult another girl around this town. He says, I'll go to your house, go in your room and pull you out from under the bed. He says, I know that's where you'll be. And he says, I'm going to beat you to a pup. But he would go to town and cut up, and we didn't have no mark leather and it had any grit. So old Dr. Watkins, he went over to Williston.
Let me get this, Chuck, while we I don't see him. I got to put my hand on that. Where in the world did I have that? Now this is, Oh yes, this boy came in with a Wild West show, Mabel and Mike's Wild West show. He wasn't much good, but he got another boy who was a real scout.
No, what was that first boy?
Fred something, but I don't remember the last.
He was from Alabama. He was a full flush.
Yeah.
But Bill Wheeler was the real article.
Now that was Bill Wheeler.
Yeah.
All right, I just couldn't find it. And he's the one you all roughed it up.
Mm-hmm.
Now I didn't kind of get that straight. Now, wait a minute. Now,
well,
how was it?
You tell that because I can tell you what happened about that. Now, I don't know what he and Tuck did.
Yeah.
But our boy was a baby then, and this Bill Wheeler, Tuck come in and was down at the barn unsaddling his horse, and Bill Wheeler rode up to the gate. And he asked where was Tuck. Well, we knew that he and Tuck were friends and all, and we said he's down at the barn. We did. He said the very word he said. He says, well, by God, I'm going to kill. And he headed down there to shoot Tuck. And Tuck kept telling him to stop. And when he come far enough, Tuck shot him in the leg. Had to.
He was left-handed. He had his pistol in his hand.
And
I told him to stop. And he kept right on coming. I shot once to try to scare him, and the next time I broke his leg. And he made 3 steps after I broke his leg. And when he stuck his hand in the door, I hit him across the arm with my pistol and knocked his gun out of his hand. And he was drunk. But when he hit the ground, the first word he said, Tug, don't kill me. If you want to do anything, get me to a doctor. And I went out there and asked my dad-in-law for his car. I didn't have a car at the time. He said, hell no, let the son of a bitch die. So by that time, there's Henry Brown and a nigger come along. Henry had a car at the time. Or did we have a car back then? I don't know. Anyhow, it wasn't down there.
Yeah.
I asked Henry if he'd take him out to Micanopy.
Bill Wheeler.
Yeah.
And he was, you all, did all that work cattle together.
Yeah, broke wild horses together, and
but he was just drunk.
That's all.
He just got mad with Chuck when they had this run-in. But when Chuck and I were first married, I used to ride an old white stallion up to visit Mama and Papa, and Papa would unsaddle the horse. And then I'd go back in the afternoon and decide it. So I was going home one afternoon, and I'd never seen a drunk man in my life. And Bill Wheeler was lying on the ground. Well, he had the most terrible expression on his face I've seen the horse was in. I stopped and I said, "Mr. Wheeler, are you sick?" And he raised up and he said, "Yes, ma'am." And he had such a terrible look until I took off. Well, I just gone just a little way down, and there was Tuck walking to meet me with his cow whip. And he said, while everybody was gone that day, Bill Wheeler had gotten drunk and come in and shot at the colored people and made them dance and just raised Cain in jail. So Tuck said he got to thinking that he might come on up the road that I would be on instead of turning off to go where he lives, so he'd come on up to meet me. But after that, I was always kind of afraid of Bill Wheeler.
That's so pretty cool. We, I told you, we kept milk cows all the time. I'd snitch some bud and go to smoke out and get a little bottle of syrup. Going up where he is batching it. And he'd come on the old wood stove.
Where Bill Wheeler was batching?
Yeah. And he'd get a frying pan and put on that, and he'd fry some bacon, and he'd start frying hot cakes. And he'd cook till I said I need all I could hold, and then I'd get up and cook till he. And that's the way we got along. He had a big old frying pan, and he'd fry it a 10 pieces of white side bacon. And he'd boil a bean until they got tender. Then you dump that over in with that meat grease and all, and season it. And you talk about good bean. Put a cover on it after you put that in and set it in the oven for a while. You talk about good beans to eat. They were good. You take one of these old tall Maxwell House coffee used to come in, tall tin can. He'd pack that thing full of those beans with put two or three biscuits maybe. That's something else we did. We cooked biscuits when we was batching.
Oh.
And that'd be our lunch when we'd go off and be going cow hunting all day.
Bill Wheeler.
He was a horse lover. He really thought a lot of a horse.
And he could handle them. And all of them was wild.
No, not all of them. Now, we had a horse we used for penning and hunting cows and things like
that. Yeah.
But I would guess there was 35 or 40, maybe 50 head of cattle up there in that hammock. Horses. And some of them stayed there until they started with a fever tick, and we had to get them out, and then we couldn't pin, we killed.
Yeah.
Boy, I never did think much about killing a horse.
Oh.
It seemed like a half human or something to me.
Oh, you mean fever tick and kill the horse?
They had to eradicate, had to get rid of the horses to get rid of the ticks, see?
Mm-hmm.
And I rode from my house one morning to five. There was five little old horses up there, and they couldn't pin them. This old boy from Dixon County.
Carl Stokes?
No.
George Hunt?
George Hunt. And he was about as good a rifle shot as I was seen. And he killed some of those horses.
If you couldn't pin them, you'd have
you
to get rid of them.
That's right.
Oh, but if you pin them, then you could eradicate them.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you dip them and take them and keep them confined somewhere. See, we dipped every 2 weeks.
Sure.
At that time, the horses belonged to the Watkins and Barr heirs. Don't you remember Carrie kind of raised Cain about and killing them? But one thing you could do, if you could pin them, they had to destroy them.
One mare up there that I wanted bad, right at the last. Well, that was the last horse in the hammock. I had an old police dog, and I was a relief range rider. Me and this old hunt boy, whenever they got anything too bad for anybody else, they sent for us. So he had to go off one evening, and asked me to ride up there and see if I could see the horses and kind of spot them. And we'd try it again the next day. When I was riding my daddy-in-law's old horse, I reckon I'd about rode mine down anyway. The horse wasn't as good as mine. We had a chute fence half a mile up through the hammock, and then it come down to the pen. Well, it had a pretty good sized pen, but the gates opened. One opened out one way and one the other. And I saw those horses out on the prairie, and I sent that old police dog out there. And they come running in the hammock, and I run quartering with them, and just before they got to the fence, I popped my whip. And they turned up that fence. And then it was me and them and the dogs from there, the pen. And they run in the pen, and I jumped down and cut one, shut one gate. I couldn't shut both of them at once. There's a stallion in a bunch, and he come around there, and he was going out. Well, I know, and I popped my whip right in his face, and he turned back, and I closed the other gate.
Hmm.
Went on back to the house and told George I had a pen. He said he didn't believe it. I said, well, go up there and see. So I got this mare. Did she have a coat before I brought her home after?
Yeah.
And it was too young to dip. So I went up there and told the first woman of the dipping it. I had a coat down there. He said, well, wait till it's two or three more days old and bring it up here and dip it. Well, I dipped the old mare. And killed her out on back there and turned in the lightning coat, sucked in it, poured it, and killed it.
Oh.
So I raised two or three more colts from her. But she is a real nice horse, and I broke her, and she never bucked a jump in a lie.
Is it?
Now, what other roughnecks have you tangled with? Besides Bill Wheeling and make up.
Well, I reckon about all the rest of the fights I did it with her.
Well, now, all those fellas, you all got to scuffing every now and then. I mean, you weren't living in the parlor or anything like that then.
No, I wasn't going to sing it either.
No. No.
No. Getting back to Henry Brown,
yeah.
you know what size he was. Well, always.
He's tall and spindly, as I remember him.
Yeah. And I don't believe he ever weighed over 180 pounds in his life.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't either for a long time. But he was the hardest man to handle that I ever seen. We had tussled, wrestled. And it just looked like he could turn over in his hide.
Was there ever anybody who broke horses out there named Slim?
Slim Wheeler. Yeah, his nickname was Bill Wheeler. His nickname was Slim.
Yeah.
No.
Where did you hear that?
That's, you know, I was so interested in these so-called wild horses out here. It was just fascinating to me. And everybody that I could talk with, I'd ask to tell me about it. Oh, that's when we first came out here. And I remember Mr. Feaster saying something about, if you wanted a horse broken, they used to call Slim.
Mm-hmm. Was that old man, old Mr. John Peace with the long beard? Yeah.
Yeah. And well, I knew, I guess his grandson, Gerald. I knew the children. And I've heard him just every once in a while talk about Slim, and I wonder, isn't that interesting? That's this.
Yeah.
That's Slim Wheeler.
Yeah.
That Gerald Feaster would be, you know.
Lynn.
It was Mr. Lynn. Well,
mm-hmm.
Now, you and Bill Wheeler broke a pair of horses for his brother-in-law, Mr. Harold Lynn. Don't you remember you all breaking them?
No, it was Lynn Feaster's uncle.
Yes, it was. And the old man Feaster's brother-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I see.
What was his last first name?
Jake
Feaster, yeah.
How long was you associated with Jim Taylor?
Well, after we left Ocala, I'm going to tell you something else. We moved down there when I was about 6 years old. And my daddy moved out on a farm. with Edwards. No, I can't remember which Edwards it was. But what sticks in my mind, there was three or four big pecan trees just about past bearing. And then there was eight of us kids. And Mother made us get out there and pick up those pecans, and she saved them till she got 1,000. That was 100 apiece for each kid and 100 for her and Dad. And that was most of our Christmas present. But then we stayed out there a couple of years, and then we moved across town. And we lived in about 3 or 4 blocks of Jim Taylor. And that's when I went to school, and his youngest sister was my school teacher. Well, after that, Dad moved again and stayed there, I don't know how long. Then he moved out to Kendrick, this side of Ocala. Stayed out there 2 years and farmed with a saloon man. His name was G.D. Hogan. He had a big saloon there in Ocala. Let's see, my older sister got married. No, we lived on 3 or 4 places around Ocala. Daddy was a rolling stone. He just kept moving. And then he moved out that west to Fairfield, and we lived a quarter of a mile from Henry Brown, Daddy. And there was, how many kids? 7, 9?
Yeah.
Yeah. My next oldest brother married Henry Brown's sister. And she stayed up in the Hamlet. At least stayed up there 2 or 3 years. And I stayed out there and boarded with them, $10 a month, and she washed my clothes. Can you think of anything like that? Imagine it?
No, I don't.
And Lord, shoot, I wasn't making but $1.25 a day.
Yeah.
Well, when you did that, what'd you do? Have 3 meals a day?
Yes, sirree. 2 of them was hot. You'd boil dinner and cook enough so we'd have enough for supper.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of times you'd cook supper too, you know, probably wouldn't have enough or something.
And you'd have a good big breakfast.
Yes. Bacon and eggs and syrup and biscuit and
grits
and coffee. Yes. Always biscuit. Wasn't no such a thing as light bread. Now, I wish they hadn't ever invented it.
No, that's a bad thing.
We lived right side the lake. And Sunday morning, any morning it was bad, where we couldn't go to work, we'd go out and catch a mess of fish. Well, when we left, she'd get up and build a fire and put on the grits and the coffee.
Yeah.
Go out there and get fish and bring them in, butcher them, and she'd go in there and fry them. And that's what we'd have for breakfast. Fish and grits and coffee and biscuit. Maybe a pickle.
Right out of the pond.
Right, fresh out of the pond.
Now that was Henry's sister?
Yeah. And his sister.
Married your
brother.
Brother.
Lee Mack.
You had it good, didn't you?
Yeah, till I got married. And then I'd lay in bed till breakfast was ready. It was a thing of the past. When I was batching up there, Inez and Lillian and our other sister and Mr. and Mrs. Chitty could come up there and have a meal with us, because they've done part of the cooking too.
Yeah.
And this old Bob Watkins, he had that lake full of traps. And we could go out there most any time we wanted to and find one or two and get you a mess of fish and go home.
Yeah. What kind of place did they live in?
Who, my brother and his wife?
Mm-hmm.
Nice little 3-bedroom bungalow.
Oh, really?
Kitchen and dining room, a back porch, and a front, big old front porch screen. Wasn't as long as mine, but it might not as wide.
Yeah.
Right there on that lake, and you could always get a good breeze off the lake. I love to live up there.
Did he build it?
No, it was built before we ever went out.
Yeah.
And they had three nigger shacks. Well, we converted one of the barns into a nigger apartment.
About that Bill Wheeler was shooting at making them dance that day that I saw him to Mama.
Now, where was that from where you are now? On back towards the lake?
Yeah. Round the lake, you might say.
Yeah.
See, there's a little lake, and then there's a sloop come down into Levy. You had to go up here and go across that. I'll take you up that side.
All right.
And going around. And we first went out there with just a little field and a cow pen and this little house and the old barn. Then we built a new barn out there. It was 100, about 50 feet wide and had stalls on both sides and a corn room.
Oh.
And a shed on the back of it on the north side. And we, the wagons and farming utensils was kept down on there. It was a dirt floor, but upstairs we made that out of dressed flooring.
Yeah.
And one night we had a barn dance up there.
Yeah.
The gals had to go up. We built up instead of building stair steps, we just made a ladder upside the wall, you know, and
yeah,
made the steps about that far apart. They could go up there, and they had a little string band. And there was a bunch of girls going to school over at Archer. And there was two or three lived between the hammock and Archer. And they'd all load up and get them, come over there. It was an all-night affair.
Oh.
They'd cook and eat and dance. And stay up till 2 or 3 o'clock.
Yeah.
And get up the next morning and go to work.
Now you're still back in there.
No, I was with my brother and sister then. Sister-in-law.
How's that?
I was living with my brother and sister-in-law.
Yeah, 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 $10 a month.
Yeah.
And including your wife.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. You don't consider that batching. Well, when was you batching?
After my brother left from out there.
Well, why did he leave? Looks like you all had it good.
And he got dissatisfied. And, well, he had two kids, and when they got up school age, he moved them into Micanopy.
Yeah.
Where they could go to school, and he just didn't like going back and forth. And,
yeah.
And then, you know, his wife got killed. My oldest brother's boy, they were staying in there with a boy named Jay Adams. He owned the house, and he left old pistol on his pillow. And the oldest brother's boy, he was in there fooling around. He didn't know what he was doing. And he got that pistol and shot her in the hip and killed her. In the long and out, in the back anyway. They were all planning to go down home to my daddy's that day. And then after he lost her, well, he left out from the hammock.
Mm-hmm.
Then I started batching.
Oh.
And Henry Brown stayed out there a lot. And work. Joe Smith, he was the boss. He'd come out there and eat. But he was one good part about it. We had a little old commissary out there. And old Bob Watkins, he always bought the best brand of everything you could think of. And that's helped me out a lot in cooking. And I'd go out there and get canned peaches, pears, or whatever, and meats of all kinds. Then I had another boy named Charlie White. He stayed out.
You all weren't out there trying to save money or anything?
No. Shoot, we didn't know. When we got a hold of a little bit of money to Ocala or someplace we went, and when we come back, we didn't have any.
I think Georgia did a lot of cooking for you too, didn't you?
Who?
Old Georgia.
Yeah, I had an old long-legged mulatto nigger. She was a good cook. She made me an Irish potato pie one day. I'd never heard of it.
No.
But when you're batching, most anything tastes good to eat. And she would take turtle eggs. And she had a bunch of old half-wild chickens out there. Always had plenty of eggs. And she'd take so many turtle eggs and so many chicken eggs and stir them up together and stir flour in and salt and pepper and fry something like hotcakes. And that was a meal within itself. It was just great. And she cooked to a turtle. And this old fella says, I'd just soon have a piece of steak.
Oh, the turtles and cook the turtles.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Jack likes turtle, man.
I sure do.
In fact, he likes any kind of wild meat. Mm-hmm.
Now, your brother never had it that good again, did he?
No, he got in bad health and he died pretty young.
Yeah.
He's got a boy and a girl left. And the boy got three boys and a girl. Morris Mack. He used to carry the Ocala Star banner. How long do we reckon it's been? He was in the army and something got wrong with him. They cut him from the back of the neck all the way down. And he never was any good at that. He could just piddle around.
Yeah. But he left the hammock. He had to get his children over that close to the school.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know that schooling business has just worked a hardship on all sorts of people.
Hasn't it? Yes, and me included.
Yes.
Well, you didn't have to leave the hammock to get your children to school.
No.
I'm glad you stayed in the hammock.
Yeah. You cut me out.
When Annette started taking, when our children first started school, she started driving a school car then, a Model T.
Yeah.
And then we finally got a Model A, and then we got too many kids, and we got a station wagon. And then after we spent all of our money and everything else, well, the county started furnishing an old rattletrap bus.
Yeah. Now, when were you raising your children? 30s?
The first one was born in
23,
and the second in 25 and 27.
Uh-huh. And then you were taking them to school around the early 30s?
In the early 30s, mm-hmm.
And when did you drive the bus yourself?
You mean the school bus?
Uh-huh, that was a lot later.
Was it the county first? Oh, I don't remember.
Was that way back then?
What year? I drove up to about 5 years ago.
Oh, did you?
30.
County, starting off in the Model T Ford, I drove 30-some years, because after my children finished school, I continued driving.
Well, you just kept up with the whole countryside that way, didn't you?
I drove
to
state retirement.
I think you'd have something a whole lot worse than a horse. I love horses, but
yeah.
After I was operated on, the doctor told me I couldn't ride horseback anymore. And I'm this, the boys come to go to the cows, you know, and I have to sit in my car and jeep or something. It works a sore spot.
That's the worst part, I guess.
Yeah.
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 And I used to.
Faye, you really have a drink of water or something.
Would you all drink a little Gatorade?
No, I don't
care.
Not
a thing?
No. I drink a glass of milk and eat two little old cheese sandwiches for my supper. And they had some turnip greens and.
Yeah, we didn't have them
tramp
greens.
What do you call that kind of? I call it bastard bread.
We
just
never eat
it. Part flour and part meal.
Later, I don't know.
And it's good. It's soft, and I don't have. I got a good set of teeth, but I don't use them.
But we got in a habit of eating candy and things, you know, watching television, and I put on so much weight, and
so you
just had to stop, and so I. Never eat anything. After
well, that's something I don't believe in.
Now, we'll take you home if you'll promise to come again.
Well, if I don't promise and I stay down here, you won't have to come get me.
That's right.
Well, I've enjoyed it.
This is just
the
most fun.
Listen to that Jim.
Jim Taylor and Bill Wheeler. We get right well acquainted back there.
Yeah, when we were talking to him, I'll tell you about the niggers.
Well, we finally made it. This is the end of that nice little session on Wednesday night in the kitchen, the 2nd of April, 1970. The 2nd of April, Wednesday. That's right, the 1st of April, Wednesday the 1st of April, 1970. The first day of April, 1970, April Fools. And we made it. We got here in April. Oh, it's been such a waiting. And this is 700, channel 2 right. Channel 2 right, 700, Tuck Max Reel. 700, Tuck Max Reel, April 1st, Wednesday, 1970.